Welcome to the Alternative to Rehab podcast with your host, Dave Cooper.
Well, here we are, finally at chapter 12, which is the final chapter of the book. And I want to read out a part of that. As usual, I won't read out the whole thing. There is an e-book which I will be publishing, but I just want to read part of it, read a section of it, and then maybe speak to it. And really what motivated me and what made me consider writing this book. So this is the final section, chapter 12. It's called Discipling Your Parts. And the first thing I do is I quote from Luke 11 and verse 15. And that's Luke 11 verse 13. Which is quoted, actually, it's in Matthew 7, verse 11 as well. It's in both of those Gospels. If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him? So that's one of my favourite quotes from the Bible, as I say, Matthew 7, 11 also. It's the where he's teaching the disciples, and he confirms what we already know through the Bible, which is that the disciples, the ones that all of Christianity was going to depend on to carry the message to the four corners, they were evil. And of course they were evil, they're human beings, and they have the sinful nature within them. So that's what confirms it. So I'll go on and read now from the chapter 12 of the book. Well, I want to say well done for getting here. You have listened to a lot of ideas that may be new to you. You have maybe been challenged by some or all of what you have heard. You may have struggled to accept some things that have gone against decades of teaching and efforts on your part. The fact that you've stuck with it so far is an achievement. All you have learned provides the context for your practice and for doing the work of recovery and growth. In this section of the book, you'll be using lots of examples from the Bible where Jesus worked with the disciples. This means that you can also make your own study of the scriptures. This will give you a coherent approach to developing your relationship with yourself as you follow the Lord's example. But before we get to any of that, let's start by using an exercise that I want you to use many times. Now, the more you use this, the more you will understand your parts and the more they will understand who you are. Think of this practice initially as a meditation exercise as much as anything else. So don't rush anything. I want you to think of situations where you acted out of control. It doesn't have to be a complete loss of control. Maybe just what you would call out of proportion behaviour. But where there has been some sense of not being fully in control of yourself. So this could include times when you get angry, times when you have become frightened, times when you have become greedy, or times when you have become overly defensive. And of course, times when you have exited through any addictive or dependent behaviour. There will often be a pattern or theme you can learn about here because your parts have learned from your behaviour to watch out for certain triggering events. A lot of you will already have these times in mind and will know exactly what I want you to focus on. But don't worry if it's not immediately obvious to you. This blankness is sometimes one of the ways your parts, your brain, will protect you. Give yourself permission with soothing words like, it's all right, you can let me see this. Get used to the idea that you can turn once again to yourself from Luke 15, 17, or in other versions it says, come to your senses. Get used to the idea that you can talk to parts or disciples within you. Get used to the idea that your parts, disciples, think very differently to you and sometimes have vastly different beliefs to your core or authentic self. realize that you can develop a relationship with them no matter how evil, again from Matthew 7:11, they appear, no matter how much trouble they've got you in, no matter how demanding or forceful they seem. Like the disciples, they have been doing the best they can in the situation they are in. But what a relief when Jesus turns up and says, "You can trust me." Just like the disciples, your brain is flexible. It is brilliant at rewiring itself. If you question this idea of flexibility, if you think that you can't do this, well, listen to Jesus' answer. "If I can, all things are possible to those that believe." That's from Mark 9, verse 23, by the way. So make up your mind to meditate for a brief time each day. Think about a time in the last 24 hours where you have not behaved well or reacted out of proportion. Maybe it was your eating, drinking, or maybe your anger or fear. Look out for things that you did or that you said you would not do, or ways you said you would not be. Now spend a little time drawing up the mood, the attitude, the beliefs, the feelings, and behavior as if it was someone else. Think about how old this person would have to be to feel, think, or talk that way. Now ask yourself which disciple this behavior fits the most. Congratulations, you have started your inner discipling ministry. So here's a short list of questions I ask people to consider when getting to differentiate the parts from their self and from each other. Question one, how old is my part? How old is my part? Now, think about the first time you remember feeling this way, and you'll get somewhere close to when that part was constructed and how old it is. Question number two, what does my part believe? What does my part believe? Think about the agenda this part has. In other words, what they need to happen. This will be strongly linked to their belief. What they have you doing or thinking or saying, that is partly then their agenda. Question number three, what part is this part covering? What part is this part covering? Think about what you were like before this part turned up. In other words, what you're doing is you're saying, if this part didn't turn up, what would happen next? Yeah? In other words, what is this part helping me to avoid doing or helping me to avoid feeling? Now, we don't have records of all the times the Lord corrected and taught the disciples. You can only imagine over 3 years working with them every day how much this happened. But we have enough to understand and work with our various parts. We have enough to begin the work of discipling our parts and inspiring them to trust us. I'll now use some examples to help you, but I would suggest doing your own study around this, where your focus will depend on the type of struggles you have experienced. In other words, everyone's a little different, so it's helpful for you to do your own study and think about your own experience. The next section is called Working in Your Upper Room. And I quote from John 15 and verse 5, where Jesus says, "Apart from me, you can do nothing." Remember earlier in the book where we learned about the upper room. When we internalize these ideas, we think of the upper room as the place where your parts become disciples. It's where the earthly traits are transformed into a spiritually motivated life. It's where their strong emotions and agendas become the peace that passes all understanding. It's where the place of fear becomes the place of courage. If you are going to develop an authentic recovery, you will need to clean and purify your upper room. To win the hearts and minds of your disciples, you will first need to understand how the atmosphere changes when the Lord is present. And I go on to a new section called the TV screen of consciousness. All the inner work you do will be done through your consciousness. Consciousness is the secular word for what I'm calling the upper room. So the first thing I want to say about this is that your consciousness is not you, any more than the upper room was the disciples. I want you to think of your consciousness like having a TV screen in the room. A TV is something you own. It's yours to use. But sometimes we end up watching something we didn't mean to. Now, when you watch TV, it should be up to you what you watch. You know that different programs will present different attitudes and appearances. The programs you watch will affect and influence you. We've all heard messages about what to avoid on the telly. Although you can't change what the different programs say and show, you can take more responsibility for which programs you watch. From now on, think of what goes on in your consciousness as a TV program you are watching. Learning the difference between these channels will help you to ask, am I choosing to watch this program? Going on now to a new section called Separating Your Parts from Yourself. In the past, you may have heard many messages encouraging you to be less like Thomas or Peter or less like Levi, the tax collector. You may have heard a message telling you to be more like John. Now, this is almost guaranteed to set up inner conflict, since this is the teaching, it mistakes the part for the self. Don't mistake the disciple for the Lord. It's only when you begin to see yourself as multifaceted that this separation, this unblending, starts to make sense. As you read the following passage, please don't try to change anything yet. Let's first look at the nature and characteristics of the disciples and the way these characteristics related to each or our inner experience. Each of the disciples showed distinctive character traits, as well as strengths and weaknesses. Jesus worked with them all, developing them through his teaching and convicting them with the truth. In doing this, he showed us the way we can do this for ourselves. You may feel that you already have heard something that seems like this approach. Well, trust me, this is not the same. Let me explain. Please be clear about this. It is here that the difference between a biblical approach and the medical approach is most clear. It is critical that you understand this difference. Jesus took responsibility for being the leader of the disciples, but he always knew the difference. John 15 and verse 15 underlines this difference and this relationship. The Bible is saying that these parts of you are to be lovingly discipled. To make them friends, but never mistake them for yourself. Romans 7:20 helps with this. Whereas the medical model approach defines them as simple examples of how you should not be, which always places you back in conflict with yourself. As you become more aware of your part's presence through increased awareness of your upper room, as you learn more about your part's strengths and thoughts through developing the observer position, as you become more aware of the difference between Christ and the disciples, start to teach them, correct them, and befriend them. This starts with letting them know who you are. Neuroscience has shown us that your parts do not know who you really are. Now, this might come as a shock to you, but it makes sense since they were all constructed at a certain age and know nothing beyond that time. Imagine meeting yourself as a youngster. You wouldn't think of questioning your younger self about what was going to happen years later. Well, think about how much more you now know and how much more you have experienced. No younger self would be able to understand how much more you know than they do. Well, it was the same with the disciples. They did not really know who Jesus was at first. It was a process. Some got it faster than others. When you speak to your parts and begin to disciple them, do not have a preconceived idea about how long it will take for them to recognize who you are. Some will acknowledge you at once, like Peter. Others will take longer, like Thomas. As you begin to develop better relationships with your parts, I want to encourage you to use a method I have found helpful. It includes these three ideas: appreciation, education, and negotiation. Now, do whatever helps you to form better relationships, but these ideas are simply what I have developed to produce a coherent method. So we'll look first at appreciation. Improving your relationship with your parts starts with appreciating some things about them. It starts with looking at what they are trying to do rather than what they are achieving. Always remember one thing, that they are trying their best to help you. They're giving you the best they have. They are never trying to screw up your life. Start with appreciating who they are. Jesus started this way. He said, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." He appreciated what they were doing, but offered to show them who they really were. Education. Educating your parts about who you are as part of the process is what comes next. Remember, trauma and difficulty in your life has trained them that they are on their own and must manage as best they can. You need to educate them that you are here, willing and able to manage this situation. Jesus said, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am." That's John 13:13. "And tell them how much older than them you are, how much more experienced you are. Tell them that you know about their blessed assurance." Again, I quote John 15:15 here, where Jesus says, "I no longer call you servants, but I now call you friends." You see that change in relationship as he's educating them about who he is. So the next thing we look at is negotiation. And we say, once you have appreciated and educated, remember that your parts will only be drawn to you if they believe you. Do not slip back into old ways and try and force them. I would say never bully or demand. Always negotiate. Ask them to consider allowing you to run things, especially around this thing that they're so concerned about. Tell them that no one who gives up things for the sake of the kingdom of God will fail to receive many times as much. That's Luke 18:29. Also, remember to speak in an age-appropriate way. You can always negotiate with an older part, but young children, toddlers, babies, they can't be negotiated with. If you find that your parts will not listen to you or accept your leadership, just hold them. Let me take a minute to tell you about the time I learned about this. One day in the store, I was in a long queue waiting to pay for my stuff. Ahead of me was a lady who was paying for her stuff. It was taking a while. Under her arm was a toddler, and he wasn't happy. He wanted a sweet, and she was not giving him one. As far as he was concerned, this was the end of the world. I noticed that she was paying with one hand whilst holding him with the other. There he was, kicking and screaming. So as I was watching, my frustration melted away. I saw that a great lesson was unfolding before me. My frustration actually turned into curiosity. Now, here are a few things that she was not doing. Here are a few things she was not doing. Number one, she's not giving in to him. that was very noticeable, that she wasn't just giving in and sort of allowing him to have what he wanted. Two, she was not allowing him to stop what she needed to do. So she's holding him with one arm while he's struggling and screaming, and she was paying for her bill with the other. Three, she was not apologising to us in the rest of the queue for what he was doing. You know, there was no sort of shame or embarrassment about, well, sorry about this. She just accepted he was doing what he was doing. And number four, she was not trying to get him to change. She was just accepting him as he was, but she was getting on with her day. Now, some of your parts may be very young. They'll not respond to negotiation. They need to be held and accepted, just like this young man, but not allowed to ruin or run your day. You need to accept that the feelings they bring, whilst being very strong, do not have to dictate your behaviour. Like this lady, you need to understand that these parts are too young to understand any of the complexities of life, but they will appreciate the security of being held, of learning the boundaries of their power. Sometimes you'll be surprised at how quickly older parts will accept authority. They do this because, like all youngsters, they would rather an adult turned up to deal with things. Right? Always remember, they don't want to do this. They just feel they have to. So it's all about trust. Right? Everything you do, every step you make here is about trust. Once they trust you to deal with a situation, they will trust you forever. They won't change. Unless you change them, they won't change. Look at the disciples' level of trust when you read the book of Acts. That's what Jesus achieved in those 3 years. And that's what you will achieve once they know that you would die for them. I then look at a section called Different and Better. Very important. How do you know when you've made progress? How do we measure progress in this approach? Well, I say to my clients, look for different and better. No matter how small the example, do not move on without spending time pulling your experience through this simple filter. Ask yourself, was this different? By which I mean from how I've been reacting for years or decades in this situation. And was it better? By which I mean as an outcome from what I've been producing in the past years or decades. Well, if it was both different and better, then move on to the next step, which is to congratulate and celebrate. Now, there are three forms of this, and they get progressively harder and progressively more effective. The first form is thinking to yourself. You know, I did well with that, or something like, I want more of that in my life. Now, this is fine and helpful, but it is the weakest form of congratulating. The second form, as a step up, is saying it out loud. This is because the route into your brain of this message is now not just in your mind, but it's now through your ears. So it's going into your brain in two separate ways. So this is much stronger. But the third form is the strongest. If you can manage it, this is to stand in front of a mirror, eyeball yourself while you say it out loud. Now the information is in your mind, it's coming through your ears and through your eyes. Very powerful. Jesus used this idea with Peter when he said, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven." That's Matthew 16, verse 17. Congratulating and celebrating spiritual progress. Amazing. There are very good reasons to remark on these examples of progress. However small, it's because they are examples of evidence. And the next section is called Brains Change with Evidence. Your brain, just like the disciples, transforms, or rewires if you like, through evidence. Your brain does not change because you changed your mind. I'm going to read that again. This is so important. Your brain does not change because you changed your mind. Remember all those times when you said, oh, I'm never doing that again. Didn't work, did it? All the motivational talks you have ever heard will not equal the power of one piece of evidence. Do not be discouraged. Congratulating and celebrating these moments is like doing exercise at the gym. Every bit of exercise is transforming you, no matter how small. The disciples' transformational journey was based on evidence. When they were presented with a huge crowd to feed, their first reaction was to look to their own limitations. Yet they saw the glory of God when they trusted Jesus and 5,000 people were fed. That's Mark 16, verses 37 to 44. Well, now that you have the tools to practice with, I want to conclude with some more encouragement using biblical examples and connecting them with your study and progress. And I go on then to talk about concrete examples of the disciples and how they, how you apply it to yourself, particularly the fact that you are unique and so your experience is going to be different to other people's. So you need to do your own study. So let me talk for a little bit now about that section of the book. Again, it's not the whole of chapter 12, but you get a good portion there and a good idea of what it's like to see the conclusion of this book. Well, the first thing I would say is that practice takes time to work. I remember one of the most famous business entrepreneurs, coaching people years ago saying, the biggest problem with ideas in business is that people don't give them time to work. And I think that is so true, whether it's, you know, our fitness, whether it's our health, whether it's our progress, whether it's our recovery, whatever it is, we have to give it time to work. So I would say, think of it as practice. And I do offer this, I say it's very similar to going to the gym. Right. If you've been sat on a couch for 10 years, you don't go to the gym that night and say, right, I'm going to come home feeling great and fit. No, you're going to feel terrible and worse. Why? Because it's practice and you're just starting out and you're stretching yourself in a way and tiring yourself, but it's doing you good. And that's why you keep going. So practice takes time to work. The second thing I would say is I liken here in this chapter the upper room to your consciousness. And I just think this is, it's just a mind-blowing idea because I don't know if you've ever considered this when you've read the Bible or you've heard sermons or preaching on this, but what an amazing thing that this room is so famous. You know, it's just a room, but how many amazing things happen though? I go into it in the book. If you've heard some of the other chapters, you may have heard me talk about it. It's just an amazing thing. And I think the fact that we're likening it to our consciousness, which is another amazing thing, because it's what basically makes us unique. It's what basically makes us God's masterpiece. And so we liken it to the upper room because so much transformational stuff happened there. So just take a moment to appreciate that idea of how amazing this place is. Number three, I would say unblending, separating self from part. I mean, this is absolutely the core of the program. And I make a point here in the book of saying, look, Jesus never, you know, he never confused himself with the disciples. You call me Lord and Master, he said, and that is correct because that's who I am, right? That is confidence. That is authority. The Bible says that Jesus spoke with an authority that amazed people, not like their religious leaders. You need to speak with that authority to your parts. Just because I say never bully them or demand, it doesn't mean you don't speak with authority. It's not about shouting. It's about stepping up into the role, being who you actually are. They will listen. They will appreciate that security. Now, number four, I wanted to make a point of different and better because, yes, this is a very key idea of how do we celebrate evidence? How do we know we've made progress? But there is, I feel as if there's something I've slightly missed out there, which is that it must be effortless. If you're looking at different and better, it can't be different and better and hard work. It must be different and better and effortless. Because different and better and hard work is just you returning to the medical model. It's just you trying hard. Well, anyone can look good for 5 minutes. Anyone can try hard and achieve something for a little while. But you know from your history, it's not going to last. When I talk about evidence, I'm talking about different and better and effortless. And maybe I should have added that third bit. Because it's really important that when you see transformation, when you see rewiring, it becomes what was impossible for you becomes easy for you. And that's the key to notice. It has to be effortless. We're not into trying hard here. We're not into psychology. And finally, number five, I wanted to make a point about evidence being the main key. I think if trust is the main idea, that's what we're trying to achieve, then evidence is the main way to get there. If you think about Jesus' ministry over those 3 years, and over his whole life really, his main ministry was to get those 12 people to trust him. That's what he was achieving. Because he needed the form of trust in him that meant they were all willing to die for him. Now that is some level of trust. Think about how much you would have to trust someone if you were willing to die if he said so. Well, that's the level of trust we're after. And so trust is the main achievement. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get our brain to trust our mind. We're trying to get our flesh to trust our spirit. That is the key. And evidence is the main thing that will get us there. Your brain changes on evidence, not on attitude or, you know, trying hard or, you know, just thinking differently. You know, like the power of positive thinking or something. It's not about self-help in that sense. It's about you saying, where's the evidence? Well, the evidence comes in the form of behavior, in the form of outcome. What are you doing that's different and better and effortless? Then celebrate that and go over the top. You know, when I talk about standing in front of a mirror and saying it, you know, I mean, I've had my clients running around a room with a banner head, you know, holding a banner over their heads, you know, literally celebrating this thing. Because what you're doing, and it's important to understand, this is not just, you know, showing off or something. This is accelerating the process of rewiring. The more you show your brain, the more you tag your congratulating and celebrating on the back of the evidence, the more that your brain is going to accelerate the process of rewiring. So there it is. That is the book. We've gone through it. It's going to be coming out very soon. And it'll be in all of the outlets that you're used to maybe buying your books in. It will be available to you. So any comments, leave them below. If you want to contact me at info@buildingrecovery.org, I will answer your questions. There's going to be teaching soon. We're going to be holding a workshop. So look out for that. And until then, be blessed.